Our lectionary continues with the Gospel of Luke early in Jesus' ministry, after he's begun preaching in the synagogues. So our reading from Luke 4, chapter 6, verses 16 to 30. Listen for the word of God. When he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eye of all the synagogue were fixed on him. Then he began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. They said, "Is not this Joseph's son?" He said to them, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Doctor, cure yourself.' And you will say, 'Do here also in your hometown the things that we have heard you did in Capernaum.'" And he said, "Truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. But the truth is, there were many widows in Israel in the time of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a severe famine over all the land. Yet Elijah was sent to none of them, except a widow at Zarephath in Sidon. There were also many lepers in Israel at the time of the prophet Elisha, and none of them was cleansed. Except Naaman, the Syrian." When they heard this, all in the synagogue were filled with rage. They got up, drove him out of the town, and led him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built, so that they might hurl him off the cliff. But he passed through the midst of them and went on his way. This is the word of the Lord. So I've preached before in the church where I grew up, and not to brag, but I got a little better reception than Jesus did here. And I think that's normal. I mean, people felt a part of it. Even people who didn't really know me well, even people who came to that church after I had already left for seminary across the country, people who, when I'd go visit, I'd get an, "Oh, are you new here?" But they all felt included. The pastor introduced me, said, this is a young man who was raised in this congregation. And I went and I preached, and my sermon there was not necessarily my best. I don't think I changed many lives, but people felt warm and fuzzy about it. I did not have to escape any murderous mobs. And whatever can be said for my preaching, I am no Jesus. So I look at this story and I say, what went wrong? I mean, people love a hometown hero, a local boy who made good. So when word began to spread of a wandering preacher all around the northern shores of Galilee, I'd imagine the town listened with interest, and a traveler would say, "Do you hear about Jesus of Nazareth?" And they'd say, "Nazareth? That's us. We're the Nazareth he's of. Wait, you mean Joseph's boy?" So led by the Spirit, Jesus heads back to the closest thing he's had to an earthly home. Led by the Spirit, it's God leading him into this situation. So that's where to put the blame first of all, I guess. And to begin with, the people are somewhere close to listening, to begin with. Luke is careful to say that. The other Gospels kind of treat it as if, you know, they've been scoffing the whole way through. But Luke doesn't write the crowd like that at first. They do give Jesus the scroll in the synagogue. They want him to read. They want to hear what he'll say. He did always seem like a sharp kid for a poor carpenter's boy. They know Jesus, after all. They saw him grow up. They saw him walking around town. They saw him. When Luke said that young Jesus grew up in the favor of God and of people, well, these are those people, because they are the people there were to be in favor of. This is the place where Jesus prayed and listened and discussed every Sabbath of his growing up. And they're putting the teaching into his hands. They have already started with the reading of the law, so now comes to the time of the prophets, and they hand it to Jesus, and, you know, you seem to have some affinity for the prophets, right? So he stands up to read. And he reads, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." It's going great. The Isaiah part. He's all grown up, the local boy. "Now is the day," he says. "This is happening among you right now." And that's when things start to sour. They seem just a little stuck. Joseph's boy? Joseph's boy. You can forgive a little disbelief. They know him, after all. And Jesus puts his finger on something that's going on. You're probably thinking, "Physician, heal thyself. Doctor, cure yourself." One of those old sayings, kind of like, never trust a skinny cook. Kind of like, don't take skincare advice from someone covered with acne. It's like they're saying, "We just don't see it in you, Jesus." As in, if he was a healer and a great teacher, then why are all his hometown people, the ones who knew him best, who he's had the most chance to heal, why are they not healed or transformed? You couldn't have started those miracles a little bit earlier, Jesus? That's suspicious. There are poor people here, needy people, but we, your friends and neighbors in Nazareth, had to hear rumors from out of town. You know, Jesus of Nazareth, and we'd say, "Joseph's boy? If this is really who you are, then why not before?" But Jesus says, "It's just happening now." And that's not enough for them. And then Jesus starts to burn his bridges a little bit. He continues. He says, "It's happening now, but maybe it's not happening for you." He starts telling all the stories about how God called so many prophets to heal outsiders instead of their hometown loved ones. How the prophets all got kicked out of their hometowns by faithless people. You know, implying the whole, "You won't accept the message. You see Joseph's boy in front of you, but you can't see God at work." Same as any other faithless people. look, Jesus may be a prophet, but when it comes to him being rejected, this prophecy seems a little bit self-fulfilling. If you're looking to get rejected by people, this is pretty much what you can say to do it. And that's when things start to get really ugly and all that. Anger starts to come right after him. So you went away, Jesus, and you found yourself some feral, camel hair wearing fanatic of a baptizer who shouted things that got him killed. Oh yes, we all heard what happened to John, how Herod cut his head off, and, well, you saw the vacancy and decided to set up camp, huh? Well, you may have all those rubes out there fooled, Jesus, but we know you. We know who you really are. And they do, don't they? Don't they know him? I mean, who knows Jesus better? The man who worked alongside Joseph doing odd jobs and striking up conversations with his young son? Who said, we need to do some housing repairs, bring the kid, who cut and sanded right alongside him, watched him grow from a little kid into a working man? Him? Or Peter by the lakeside, who just after meeting him dropped everything to follow? Who knows Jesus better? Or the teacher in the synagogue who read the law to him each Sabbath and answered his questions and questioned his answers. Him? Or Paul, struck suddenly blind by a vision while he traveled, a voice that in a few sentences changed the course of his life. Which of these really know Jesus? Or take any person today who learned Bible story after Bible story, cover to cover out of a sense of dutiful obligation, and put them next to a person who's maybe never picked that book up and finds themselves sleeping in the street with just an empty booze bottle to their name, and then suddenly they hear a word of grace that changes everything. Who knows Jesus more? There's knowing, and there's knowing. But all of these people have some more surprises along the way. Peter found out he signed up for more than he bargained for. And even as he confessed Jesus as the Messiah, he was shocked to find himself standing first by a cross and then an empty tomb. Or Paul, who after hearing the call would find himself journeying over land and sea, find miracles and trials and churches sprouting from the words he preached. Or the Sunday school teacher, who knows that book front to back, who, if they can open their ears anew, may find that all those stories have said something that they never quite grasped. Or the former addict who finds that their sudden transformation leads into a different life that still must be lived. That the grace comes with a calling. All of these know Jesus, but all of them have some surprises in store. And those townspeople in Nazareth who have known Jesus, they've got some surprises in store, too. They're furious that Jesus will do no miracles for them, that he claims to be something more than they can see. How can this fellow say we do not know him? They chase him to the edge of a cliff. They mob him in fury. They try to hold him, push him off, and he slips right through. Right through the middle of them. He's just not there anymore. And the crowd is standing at a precipice, a whole bunch of anger with nowhere to go all of a sudden. And it turns out they did get a miracle that day. It's not a flashy one, He doesn't float through the air, fly off into the clouds. He just moves through this wall of people that had pinned him. They do get some kind of miracle. Maybe no healing, but they tried to kill someone, and Jesus miraculously kept that from happening. And that is a very good thing for them. And so now all their old ideas about Jesus, about who this person is, are left with this empty space in front of them, fallen silent, where Jesus has left to go do something new. Now, to my knowledge, no one here has joined any murder mobs lately, so maybe the lesson is limited. Or maybe it's this: that if you think you've got a handle on who Jesus is, if you think you've got him in a nice box with no surprises left, well, I've got bad news and I've got good news. The bad news is that there are surprises for you yet. If you try to hold Jesus down, he will slip through your fingers. That's something he can do just as surely now as in an angry mob. The good news is the good news. Preached to the poor and lost and outside, the blind seeing, the oppressed liberated. Here is transformation happening again, new, as God's work is always new. So get ready. Jesus has some surprises yet.